So let's start with a premise that, you know, usually holds true in engineering. Ground stations don't move.
Right. They're fixed, bolted to the ground.
Exactly. You bolt a dish to a concrete pad, you calculate the orbit, and you just wait. The satellite is the variable, you're the constant.
That is pretty much the foundation of almost all orbital mechanics. You're solving for one moving body relative to a fixed point.
But today we're doing a deep dive into a scenario that just throws that entire assumption out the window.
Completely.
We're looking at a system where the quote-unquote ground station is actually a balloon. It's floating 20 kilometers up in the stratosphere, moving at jet stream speeds.
Sometimes 100 kilometers an hour. It's wild.
Over the Arctic Ocean. It's a Stratosonde balloon. It has critical atmospheric data, a tiny battery, and it needs to hit a target moving at 7.5 kilometers per second in low Earth orbit.
It's a double moving target problem. And the margin for error, because of the power constraints, is basically zero.
So that's our topic, satellite pass prediction for a moving platform. We're dissecting how the Stratosonde team with Lacuna Space is trying to solve this.
And it's not just about finding the satellite.
No, it's about doing it with a microcontroller that has less memory than, like, a text message.
That's the real hook.
Yeah.
It's a classic optimization problem. How much math can you cram onto a tiny chip before it freezes to death?
Okay, let's set the stage with those hardware constraints, because that really seems to be the core of the problem here. We're not talking about big Starlink terminals, right?
No, absolutely not. Those things are power hungry. If you look at the Stratosonde, they're using LoRaWAN.
Long-range wide area network.
Yeah, and usually that's a terrestrial technology.
Yeah.
You have a sensor out in a field. It chirps data to a gateway on a tower maybe 5 kilometers away. It's simple.
But there are no towers in the middle of the Arctic.
Exactly. So they're using Lacuna Space. Lacuna basically puts these LoRaWAN gateways on satellites in low Earth orbit, LEO, about 580 kilometers up.
So they're like orbiting cell towers.
That's a great way to put it.
Okay, but I've looked at the specs for LEO constellations. They orbit the Earth, what, every 96 minutes or so?
Roughly, yes.
So from any point on Earth, you should see a satellite a few times a day. So why is this so hard? If the balloon just waits, one's going to fly over eventually.
Well, if you had infinite power, you could. You could just leave your radio on, scan the sky, and the moment you hear that satellite, you transmit.
But the Stratosonde doesn't have infinite power.
It has a daily energy budget for this specific subsystem of maybe 20 to 30 milliamp hours.
Wait, 20? My phone battery is like 3,000?
Right. So imagine trying to run a space program on, what, 1% of your phone's battery?
Wow.
If that balloon leaves its receiver on to listen, it burns about 10 to 15 milliamps continuously.
Okay, so do the math. That's 2, maybe 3 hours of listening time, tops.
Mm.
Then the battery's dead.
And you've lost the mission. The balloon just becomes a ghost. But you can't listen. You have to sleep.
To wake up at the exact right moment.
Exactly. When the satellite is overhead, you transmit your data, and you're right back to sleep.
Which brings us back to prediction.
Okay, I get that.
Yeah.
But here's where I'm still a little skeptical.
Mm.
The balloon is moving, sure. But the satellite's footprint on the ground, isn't that circle like 500 kilometers wide?
It can be, yes, depending on the elevation angle.
So even if the balloon zips along at 100 kilometers in an hour, it's still well inside that 500 kilometer circle. Why does the drift matter so much?
That's a really common misconception. You're thinking about it like a binary switch. You know, either you're in range or you're not.
Yeah.
But for radio frequency, especially at these low power levels, the quality of the link is everything. It depends heavily on the elevation angle.
You mean how high the satellite is above the horizon?
Precisely. If the satellite is directly overhead, that's 90 degrees. The signal path is short, less atmosphere. But if it's near the horizon, say 10 or 15 degrees,
the signal has to travel through way more air.
A ton more. The link budget? That's the equation that tells us if the signal is strong enough, it barely closes at the edges of that footprint.
Ah, so if the balloon drifts 80 kilometers in the wrong direction, it might push itself from a really good pass, a solid connection, into a marginal zone where the signal just gets lost in the noise.
So the timing gets thrown off. The balloon wakes up at noon thinking the satellite is at its peak. But because the balloon drifted west, the peak actually happened at, what, 11.54?
And the balloon wakes up to total silence. Mm. It just screams its data into the void, burns that precious energy, and gets nothing back.
Okay, so we need to predict the future position of a pretty chaotic object. The balloon is completely at the mercy of the jet stream.
Right, it can speed up, slow down, change direction.
How do they handle that? Do they just wake up constantly to check the GPS?
They can't. Even a GPS fix is expensive.
Yeah.
It costs about 25 to 80 milliamps just to power up the module and get a lock.
So if you check your position every 5 minutes, you blow the entire power budget just figuring out where you are.
Let alone talking to space.
They're trapped. Can't stay awake to listen, can't wake up often enough to track their own movement.
And this is where the engineering gets really clever. They came up with what they call predictive wake-up with mid-course correction.
It sounds like missile guidance.
It's kind of similar, ideally. The whole concept is based on the linearity of the drift. Over short time, the wind is relatively constant. Over a long time, it's chaotic.
So they just chop the time in half.
Exactly. Let's walk through the algorithm. So the balloon wakes up. He gets a GPS fix, it runs the LPP2 library, the Lacuna Pass predictor, and it calculates the next pass. Let's say the math says a satellite will be here in 60 minutes.
But it knows that in 60 minutes the balloon won't be here.
Right, but it has no idea where it will be.
Right.
So instead of sleeping for the full 60 minutes, it just sleeps for 30.
The mid-course check.
It wakes up at T-minus 30, gets a new GPS fix. Now it has two data points.
Where it was and where it is now, it can see its own velocity.
It knows which way the wind is blowing.
Yeah.
And more importantly, it recalculates the satellite pass from this new location. And it asks a critical question. Is the pass getting better or is it getting worse?
You have to find better.
Is the max elevation angle getting higher? Is the time of arrival getting closer? If the balloon is drifting towards the satellite's path, the pass is improving. The algorithm says, great. Go back to sleep for the rest of the time and get ready to transmit.
And if it's drifting away.
Then the algorithm sees that the max elevation has dropped. Maybe it's now only going to peak at 10 degrees. That's a garbage pass.
Not worth the battery.
Not worth the battery life to even try. So it aborts.
That's really interesting. It's not just about timing, it's a go-no-go decision engine. It decides to save energy rather than try a Hail Mary.
Precisely. This method, checking halfway, it keeps the error from accumulating. They found this halfway idea is the sweet spot. Check more often you waste power on GPS, less often the drift error gets too big.
And the numbers in the report said this brings the cost down to about 2.9 milliamp hours per successful pass.
Which fits right into the budget. It lets them make multiple solid attempts per day without killing the whole system.
Now, there is a second strategy they mention, which they call opportunistic. And honestly, when I read the success rates, what, 3 to 5%? I thought, why even bother? That sounds
Which
useless.
sounds useless if you look at a single event, sure.
Yeah.
But you have to think about the probability over time. It's kind of like the birthday paradox of satellite comms.
Okay, walk me through that.
So the balloon has to wake up every 5 minutes anyway. That's its primary job, doing science.
Right, measuring pressure, temperature, whatever.
The microcontroller is already awake. The sunk cost has been paid.
Okay.
The extra cost to run the pass prediction algorithm, just the math part, is negligible. We're talking maybe 0.01 milliamp hours.
Yeah.
So every 5 minutes, it just asks the question, is there a satellite overhead right now?
And 95% of the time, the answer is no.
Correct. But if you ask that question 12 times an hour for 24 hours a day, that's nearly 300 checks.
Oh, I see.
Even with just a 3% chance per check, the cumulative probability for finding at least one satellite in a day gets really, really high.
It's a low probability event, but you're rolling the dice hundreds of times for free.
And it's free data. It's a bonus. So the final recommendation is a hybrid strategy. Use the deterministic mid-course method for your main critical data uploads, but you leave the opportunistic mode running in the background just to catch any lucky breaks.
I want to pivot to the implementation because this is where the software engineers listening are probably going to perk up. We are talking about doing orbital mechanics, Keplerian elements, propagation models on a microcontroller.
Yeah, this is the STM32WWL. It's a fantastic chip, but it is an embedded ecosystem. We're talking about like 17 kilobytes of flash memory for this entire library.
For context, a standard orbital propagation library like SGP4, which is the industry standard for this stuff, is usually heavy, lots of sine, cosine, floating point operations.
And standard SGP4 implementations can be really bloated. They are not designed for a chip that's also trying to read a pressure sensor and manage a battery at the same time.
So how did they fit it all in 17 kb?
They had to strip it down to the studs. The LPP2 library is a highly optimized C implementation. They likely had to make some really hard choices about precision.
Like using fixed point math instead of floating point.
Well, the STM32WL does have a floating point unit, an FPU, so it can do floats. But double precision math is slow, and it's a memory hog. They almost certainly optimized the algorithms to use single precision where they could, or maybe simplified the Earth model.
But doesn't that sound risky? If you simplify the model too much, you lose accuracy.
You do.
Yeah.
But you have to remember the application. You don't need to know the satellite's position down to the centimeter.
Right, you're not pointing a laser at it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You just need to know if it's generally overhead for an omnidirectional radio antenna. An error of a few kilometers is totally acceptable.
So they traded precision for efficiency.
That is the very definition of embedded engineering. But there's a catch here that software can't really fix. The almanac.
Right, the data file that tells the balloon where all the satellites are supposed to be.
And in low Earth orbit, that data has a shelf life. Atmospheric drag is a real thing. Satellites slow down, they drop altitude, the map starts to drift from reality.
The source material said the almanac is only valid for 14 to 30 days.
Which is a huge problem for a long-duration flight. If that balloon is up there for 60 days, by day 45, the almanac is garbage. The predictions will just be wrong.
Can't they update it?
That's the catch-22. To update the almanac, you need to download a new file from the satellite. But to download the file, you need to know where the satellite is to wake up and receive it.
So if you lose the schedule, you can't get the update to fix the schedule.
Exactly. It's a loss of lock scenario.
Yeah.
If that happens, the balloon might have to fall back to that purely opportunistic strategy, just waking up randomly and hoping to catch a satellite to ask, "Hey, what time is it and where are you?"
That is a terrifying failure mode. It's like being lost in the woods and just waiting for a stranger to walk by so you can ask for a map.
But it's a necessary risk. Right now, this system is in the planning and desktop validation phase. They've run the simulations. The math should work.
But a simulation isn't the stratosphere.
No. In the simulation, the temperature isn't minus 60 Celsius.
I wanted to ask about that. We know batteries hate the cold. But what about the processor? Does the code actually run differently at minus 60?
The code itself doesn't change, but the timing can. The crystal oscillators, those are the little vibrating quartz things that keep time on the chip, they can drift pretty significantly with extreme temperature swings.
So 1 second on the chip might not be 1 second in reality anymore.
Exactly. If your internal clock drifts by just a few seconds a day because of the cold, and you're trying to hit a 10-minute satellite window after 20 days, you might just wake up too late.
Ah, but the mid-course correction helps with that too.
It does, because getting a GPS fix effectively resets your clock. It resynchronizes you with atomic time from the GPS satellites.
So the GPS isn't just for position, it's the master timekeeper.
It has to be.
They mentioned a drive test before the actual flight.
Yeah, this is the fun part. Before you launch a multi-thousand-dollar balloon, you stick the electronics in a car, or even better, a boat, and you just go for a ride.
Because a car moves like a balloon.
It moves enough. You want to test the algorithm's ability to handle those changing coordinates in real time. If you can drive down the highway at 100 kph and successfully connect to a Lacuna satellite, you've proven the math holds up under velocity.
Though a car does have one distinct advantage. If it breaks, you can pull over. If the balloon breaks, it's just debris in the ocean.
That is the nature of the beast.
I want to zoom out for a second. We're getting into the weeds of milliamps and C code, but what does this capability actually unlock? Why do we care so much about connecting a balloon?
It fills in the blind spots on the map.
Yeah.
We have excellent data where people live. We have weather stations in cities, sensors on land. But the poles, the middle of the Pacific Ocean, the upper atmosphere, those are data deserts.
We rely on satellites looking down, but that's just remote sensing. It's not the same as actually being there.
Right. A satellite looking down sees the top of a cloud. A balloon inside that cloud measures the actual particle density. If you can solve this communication problem, you can deploy thousands of these things. You create a sensor web that covers the entire planet.
It fundamentally changes the granularity of our climate models.
Drastically.
Yeah.
But it requires this total shift in thinking. You can't just brute force the connection with more power. You have to finesse it with intelligence.
It reminds me of that line from the blog post. Sometimes the most valuable engineering result isn't building something that works. It's building something that teaches you why it doesn't.
That's the humility you need for R&D. They're going to fly this. And honestly, the first one might fail. Maybe the almanac drift is worse than they predicted. Maybe the cold kills the battery voltage even faster.
But that failure becomes the map for the next version.
Exactly.
Before we wrap up, I want to circle back to that idea of the almanac one last time. It just strikes me as a really powerful metaphor for how we interact with technology today.
How so?
Well, we're all obsessed with real-time data, but so often we're actually relying on these cached maps of the world. We think things are static. We think if we knew where something was yesterday, we know where it is today.
And in a dynamic system, that gets you killed.
Or at the very least, it gets you disconnected.
Mm.
This project shows that when everything is in motion, the observer, the target, the planet itself, you can't rely on a static map. You have to be willing to wake up halfway through the journey, look around, and admit, I might be drifting.
That check, that willingness to correct your course based on new data, is the only way you can ever hope to hit a moving target.
Whether you're a microcontroller in the stratosphere or just, you know, trying to navigate a project down here on Earth.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Thanks for this deep dive. It's really fascinating stuff.
Always a pleasure.
And to our listeners, keep your almanacs updated, and we'll catch you on the next pass.